through the dead of night, seeking out broadcasting injustice wherever it appears. Only one man can wield it. Media Bat with Tim Bat, only on 95 BFM.
Morning, Tim. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
Very well, actually. Very well this morning.
Excellent.
How's the media looking? What's happening in the big bad world?
Well, some interesting stuff in New Zealand. Police 10-7's capturing a lot of... What word am I... It's catching flack.
Catching flack. Finally, I feel.
So there's been a lot of commentary on this. It's actually one of those issues that's been bubbling away over the years.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that, but I am also always surprised that it's still on TV, I think.
You and
that's
me both.
Where I come back to
I've
with that.
I've never quite, like, I get that you can use TV to solve crime sometimes, but Police 10-7, it does just seem like propaganda to me. And
propaganda.
I don't understand documenting police activities for entertainment value for the masses. It seems skew with. Anyway, that's just my hot take. But this has reached a flashpoint because an Auckland councillor, Efeso Collins, tweeted that Police 10-7 should be taken off the air. And I'd like to share the tweet, if
please,
I may.
Please do.
Hey TVNZ, it's time you drop Police 10-7. A couple of days ago, I was watching TV and your ad cut promoing the show, promoing the program showed young brown people. This stuff is low-level chewing gum TV that feeds on racial stereotypes, and it's time you acted like a responsible broadcaster and cut it. So this has led to a wave of reactions from different parties. One that I was particularly interested in is Graham Bell, who's the long-time host of the show and former police officer. He went on Newstalk ZB and spoke to Kerry McIver, and amongst other things, I listened to that. He was on for about 7 minutes, and it sort of starts fine and then becomes an increasingly difficult listen towards the end. Like, it's really yucky stuff. But
I appreciate you taking one for the team and listening to it and getting the scoop for us.
You see these quotes printed and you're like, man, was it really that bad? And I can confirm it was. So here's the, like, big pull quote from Graham Bell on that. It's very difficult not to develop a slight attitude to a group of people that are constantly offending. And, like, if you listen towards the end of the interview, it's just him and Kerry McIver trying to, like sniffing around what the actual structural problems are without ever connecting the dots. That there's a set of people in this country who are just have been, like, intergenerationally oppressed.
Yeah.
And we've got this narrative that we're pushing through on TV screens that is, like, I mean, it's white supremacy, really.
It is.
Just because people like burning crosses doesn't mean they're not racist. It's kind of this
it's a pyramid.
Pervasive.
Yeah.
It's pretty gross. There's a very good piece written by a former police officer on the spin-off at the moment. Tim McKinnell is his name. And he dug into Police 10-7 and the agreement that Screen Time, which is the production company, have with the police.
Mm.
And I'll just read a little quote that he's written here because he's put it very well. The wording of the agreement between police and Screen Time tells us all we need to know. Police 10-7 is not so much fly-on-the-wall reality television, but carefully manicured and managed propaganda, unequivocally controlled by the police. The general vibe of the agreement between the police and Screen Time is very much one of Screen Time being delivered exclusive access on the condition that they do what they are told and do not embarrass the police nor expose them to legal risk. This agreement is also notable for the total absence of terminology like balance, fairness, monitoring, and titiriti. So that is coming from a former police officer who admits in his earlier days was, like, grateful for the show being on the air because it casts cops in such a positive light. If you're interested in this,
propaganda.
I do recommend reading that piece on the spin-off at the moment.
People are enjoying your propaganda term here, by the way. There's a lot of texts about it coming out. Propaganda.
Very much did not start that, but I'm glad that you're enjoying my spreading of it. So I guess this is a watch the space on this, but I don't know. It kind of feels to me like, I don't know, TV is being watched predominantly by boomers these days anyway, so what I think is untenable is really irrelevant because it's a whole other audience that's watching TV during the week.
Crikey.
I don't know, this one's a little bit dry, but sort of interesting. There's a good piece in the newsroom at the moment written by Stephen Parker on New Zealand On Air, who conducted a review into their media fund. So this was $55 million over 3 years for a public journalism slush fund, essentially. shouldn't call it a slush fund, just a fund.
A fund.
And they conducted an independent review into it by a guy called Hal Crawford, who used to run news at MediaWorks, mm-hmm. who now lives in Australia. And he was shocked by the lack of audience data that they've captured around the projects that they've funded.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So it's a pretty massive omission, the lack of numbers that they've got in this area. And he actually, while he was conducting in-person interviews with staff at NZ On Air, might have found the reason why. I'll just read from the piece here. He revealed in an interview that someone from New Zealand On Air, the lack of capturing meaningful data, audience data, may be at least partially by design. Quote, driven by desire to avoid being held hostage to the numbers. So that's kind of speaking to the fact that New Zealand On Air has a mandate to fund stuff, often for niche audiences. The whole reason it exists is to balance the commercial interests of like mass market media.
Absolutely.
To make sure that things that wouldn't normally be made because they don't have like huge overwhelming popularity still get made for these niche audiences because they have an intrinsic value. So from that point of view, it's like, yeah, that's the balance of we can't be driven solely by the numbers. But, you know, I still think when there's $55 million in a fund of taxpayers' money over 3 years, It is pretty weird and shocking that they didn't have better, higher quality audience data for the projects that they funded. So I reckon they'll change that. that's in the little nerdy, wonky areas of the internet that's making some waves.
Is that's under the merger kind of bracket of conversation at the moment still, is it, or not?
No, so this is just, yeah, it's very confusing, all the different bodies, if you're not kind of like involved in it. So New Zealand On, this is just a New Zealand On Air thing.
Okay, specific to that. It's not talking about the big TVNZ-RNZ merger.
No, it's not. Oh, okay. And New Zealand On Air is the central funding body for media stuff in New Zealand. And to be honest, like 95% of everything you see gets at least like partially funded by New Zealand On Air, because making stuff is super expensive.
Very, very expensive.
Especially in TV land.
And it is important to have those funds that mean, as you say, like things that haven't got commercial viability necessarily can still exist because they're awesome.
Do you know what I fear it is? Is it's reactionary assholes like the taxpayer union that can very easily grab headlines out of when these data points are released. So it's like, the government spent $1 million making this and only 6,000 people, you know, watched it to the end. But it might be some pretty critical piece of journalism about it.
Investigative journalism or something in this hypothetical
society. And finally, this is kind of interesting. So TVNZ's, they released some political polling. They team up with Colmar Brunting for their political reporting, and earlier this month released their first poll. They have totally jettisoned landlines, finally.
Whoa.
And
For polling. Okay, right.
Yeah,
that definitely changes the game a bit, eh?
Well, it turns out it did, because I don't know if this is related or not, but there's a really good, I couldn't find any written piece, but there's a segment that Media Watch on Radio New Zealand did, Colin Peacock, about the huge upswing in unsure being the answer for preferred Prime Minister stakes.
Right.
So it's up to like 40% now have no preferred Prime Minister. And a really good point that Colin Peacock was making is that different media commentators took this data and spun it into a bunch of different narratives. So some people said Jacinda's doing terribly. Some people said Judith Collins is doing terribly, because they both went down. But what
didn't Colin, old mate get Simon Bridges get 1%?
He got 1%. Yeah. Christopher Luxon was on 2%.
Come back.
Yeah. So the comeback kid. Colin Peacock makes a really good point that we should probably look at maybe getting rid of that question.
Yeah.
Like, I understand why the news do it, because it's very easy to report on.
Totally.
And it's a popularity contest that we all inherently understand. There's like one person who's the most popular, and you extrapolate it to be this.
Means a lot more than maybe it necessarily does mean.
Yeah, weather vane as to how the parties are doing. But it's not how we elect anyone in New Zealand.
No.
Like, that's not how we pick our Prime Minister. We vote on a party and an electorate MP.
Yeah.
You don't vote
for your Prime Minister.
Your Prime Minister. So it is
directly.
A slightly weird anomaly that's in the polling. And because the data is of such, I would say, low quality, you can kind of spin whatever narrative you want from it. So there you go.
Everything's a construct.
Everything's a construct, baby. We're in the Matrix.
Oh, dear. Is that the media?
This is the media. The media.
Thank you very much for that, Tim. Enjoyed that. Always a pleasure. We'll see you next week.
Catch you then. Bye.
Come back next week for another exciting adventure on Media Bat. Only on 95 BFM.